Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 31 degrees with gusty west winds and intermittent snow showers this morning. Today is Thursday, January 26, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. A magistrate from Haines will come to Sitka to handle the docket left behind by the sudden death of Sitka magistrate Bruce Horton. The 62-year-old Horton died Friday after an accident in his home. Magistrate John Hutchins is the first of several substitute magistrates who will serve in Sitka until a new magistrate is hired. And as reporter Tara Bicknell reports, Hutchins is also among scores of magistrates who were trained for their jobs by Horton.
Magistrate Hutchins first met Horton after his appointment to Haines District Court in 2002. He explains Horton was kind of a mentor judge for the region's judges.
The court system flew me down to Sitka to work with Bruce, who goes through and gives you an initiation into your role and trains you in really how to do the practical things that happen in a court. So you spend time with him, and then he's one of a group of what they call training judges. So all the magistrates in the first district knew him because he trained pretty much every one of us, and he's come up almost every year to evaluate us.
Until a permanent replacement is hired in Sitka, magistrates from other Southeast communities are filling in. Hutchins is taking the first shift. He'll handle Sitka cases by phone this week, then in person for 2 weeks, returning to Haines by mid-February. During his time away, he'll handle Haines cases or any other Haines business by phone.
I'll be doing pretty much what I do here in Haines, except in Sitka, it's a bigger community, so it's more of it. You know, here on a day, I may have two or three court hearings, where there it may be 10 court hearings. But it's pretty much the same things we do, enforcing the criminal law and hearing small claims cases and traffic, people that contest traffic citations.
Hutchins says the Haines court has rescheduled some court business, but the workload changes should not affect regular operations or scheduled hearings at the Haines District Court. Hutchins leaves for Sitka next week.
You know, it'll be a little hard going into his office and working in the office where he was for so long. That'll be kind of difficult. And, you know, it's like you can't fill Bruce's shoes, so what am I doing here? But hopefully he trained me well.
In Haines, I'm Tara Bicknell.
Halibut management scientists repeated concerns this week that they've been overestimating halibut stocks for several years. They also renewed their call for a 19% overall cut to the coastwide catch for this year. As a region, though, Southeast would see a small increase after 6 years of dropping quotas. The International Pacific Halibut Commission's meeting is underway this week in Anchorage. Matt Lichtenstein has more on the staff presentations.
Estimating fish stocks involves a lot of uncertainty, according to commission staffers. They detailed the problems through 4 hours of technical presentations Tuesday. In retrospect, they think the commission has allowed too much harvest on a declining stock in recent years. Scientist Juan Valero explained that as the staff assesses the current halibut biomass each year, it also uses more current information to revise estimates from past years as well. Through this, they have found that they have consistently overestimated the overall poundage of halibut since at least 2005, while underestimating catches. The problem's called retrospective bias.
The retrospective bias occurs when we realize that what we thought we knew in the past, actually it is not. It has been overestimated or underestimated.
So, for example, Valero said the staff reduced last year's biomass estimate by 25% after the stock estimate for this year. Had they known they were at that level at the time, according to Valero, they would have reduced the harvest rate. He and other scientists said they are working on new management approaches and policies so they can prevent the problem in future assessments.
But in the meantime, what do we do? Because the retrospective bias is there, or has been there, and is estimated to potentially to be ongoing. So what I'm working here are, if you will, a way to treat the symptom if we cannot find the cure, as of now.
Valero described one such band-aid approach, revise current harvest levels based on the maximum overestimate from the previous year. In the case of 2012, that could mean cutting the harvest roughly in half. However, staff did not go so far as to recommend that much of a change for this year. Bruce Lehman is the IPHC's executive director.
We have a lot of work in front of us, I believe, in terms of trying to solve the retrospective issue, which is the primary thing that we need to do. We could apply the sort of fix that has been outlined for you, but that is not designed to try and solve the retrospective problem, which is the serious issue here that we need to deal with.
Another part of the problem, as Lehman and other scientists have explained before, is the declining size of halibut at age. The fish are taking longer to grow big enough to harvest. Lehman pointed out that halibut growth is something managers cannot control. Dan Falvey of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association thanked the staff for bringing up the retrospective issue ahead of time.
So it doesn't become binding as a policy on the current year's catch limits, because that really makes it difficult for us to tease out whether it's a good solution to it or whether or not you're just swapping quota from area to area. And my question is, next year, as you look at the retrospective issue, you're going to probably come up with a policy to address it next year. Will we have a chance to review that policy next year before it becomes binding on next year's catch limits?
The commission's Bruce Lehman said yes, the staff would probably try to make their research public to the extent that they're able to finish it for the next annual meeting. Lehman went through the recommended catch levels for 2012, which are the same as those he first presented late last year during the commission's interim meeting. Overall, the coastwide catch would drop about 19% from 41 million pounds to 33 million. That includes another cut to the biggest segment of the halibut catch, the Central Gulf Area 3A, which would have a limit of about 12 million pounds. That would be down another 17% on top of several previous years of reductions. Area 2C, which is southeast Alaska, and the Pacific Northwest, Area 2A, are the only areas that may see an increase under the staff's recommendations for 2012. The Northwest quota would go up about 9% to just under a million pounds. 2C's commercial quota would increase about 13% for a total of about 2.6 million pounds. 2C commercial fishermen have weathered the biggest cuts to their individual catches, a loss of nearly 80% over the last 6 years. Under the recommendations, South Central charter halibut operators would see a decrease in their guideline harvest level, while the Southeast charter fleet would see an increase. The commission meeting is slated to wind up late Friday morning after a vote on the catch recommendations and other proposals, which ultimately have to be approved by the federal governments in the U.S. and Canada. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
The ferry Taku should be back in action today after its second breakdown this month. The 370-passenger ship was tied up in Juneau Sunday night due to a problem with its propeller control system. Officials then canceled a round-trip sailing to Prince Rupert. Marine Highway Chief Mike Neusel says the Coast Guard determined the Taku was not safe to sail.
There are two systems for the two different propellers, so that there's redundancy. If one of them fails, the other one could control both, but we will not be allowed to operate on just one controlling both shafts, because if it fails, then there is no control. It's loss of propulsion, which is obviously a bad thing in the restricted waters of southeast Alaska.
The Taku stopped sailing about a week and a half ago after a hairline crack was found in its hull. It returned to service after being patched up. Neusel says the two problems are not connected. He says repairs should allow the Taku to resume its route this afternoon, but Petersburg, Wrangell, Sitka, and Ketchikan have lost port calls. The ferry Matanuska filled in with a stop in Cake. The Taku's controllable pitch propeller system is a little like a hydraulic transmission.
Basically, instead of varying the revolutions per minute of the engine or the speed of the engine, you change the pitch on the propeller blades to increase or decrease thrust propulsion. So the hydraulic system had contamination, had a mechanical problem in it. That's being taken apart, analyzed, and assessed for repairs.
The 350-foot-long Taku is almost 50 years old. Petersburg police and a regional anti-drug task force say they've confiscated 6 pounds of marijuana bound for the village of Cake. The narcotics were found in two totes traveling inside a barge shipment. Sunday morning seizure resulted from an investigation by the group Southeast Alaska Cities Against Drugs, or SECAD. State Trooper Sergeant Christopher Russell supervises the task force out of Juneau.
Well, on the 17th, SECAD received a tip about a shipment of suspicious shipment coming from Oregon that had been identified in Seattle and was bound for Cake. We conducted an investigation, and with that investigation, we were able to obtain a search warrant out of the Juneau courthouse. And with that search warrant, we were able to get into the two totes that were shipped directly from Seattle to Petersburg, and then would be eventually put on a different barge and heading to Cake.
Petersburg Police Sergeant and SECAD Officer Heidi Agner searched the totes at the barge terminal and says she found 92 ounces, or just under 6 pounds, of pot packed in plastic bags. According to Agner and Russell, that's a lot for Petersburg or Cake. Russell estimates the street value at $50,000. He says tips from the public can be a big help in cases like this.
It's just great. You know, we got a cooperating source that helped us out. And usually when we do get help from the public, especially when the person, let's say, doesn't want to remain anonymous, what we would call a good citizen, that really helps us out a lot with these investigations. You know, drug work's much more easier when we have assistance from the public, and we always appreciate it when people call. Even if they do want to remain anonymous, we still appreciate any tips the public is willing to provide.
As of Monday, police had made no arrests, but Russell said the investigation is still underway. A Dillingham Democrat wants to expand a program that helps rural Alaskans pay for the cost of electricity. Representative Bryce Edgman at this point doesn't expect a groundswell of support for his proposal HB 294, but he does see the bill as a way to have a broader discussion on rural energy costs and the Power Cost Equalization Program, or PCE. Edgman says energy costs are a major concern for his constituents. He says he hasn't seen any other proposal that would provide immediate relief for rural Alaskans paying high energy costs. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka and PA calls for snow showers and isolated thunderstorms. Snow accumulation of 1 to 2 inches, highs around 34. Southwest winds 10 to 20 miles per hour, increasing to west 25 late this afternoon. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.